Thank you very much. I'd like to begin by thanking Iriza and Albert Van Veniste in particular for the invitation to speak today. It's a great honor to be in this group of very distinguished speakers. And I would like also to give my congratulations to David Harrell and Alan Wilski on the honor that's being conferred on them this week. It is the 30th anniversary of ERISA, and it's also the 30th anniversary of my PhD from MIT. And I feel quite honored to have been the first of Alan Wilski's PhD students, of which there are, I don't know, 50 or so over the years. He doesn't seem to be able to count them. So it's a real pleasure to be here to celebrate with him. And I also wanted to thank Alan in particular for your friendship and support over these many years. What I'll be talking about today is for me, a relatively new subject. I've focused most on stochastic control and estimation theory. This is a somewhat new topic for me, which is maybe appropriate because Alan has been relatively fearless over the years in terms of jumping into new areas. But it does have many stochastic aspects, which also seems to me appropriate, as almost everything I can think of that Alan has done over the years has had some stochastic or statistical aspects. So this work is joint with Michael Fu, a colleague of mine, and Zhaoqiao Hu, who is a PhD student of ours. When he receives his PhD in a few months, I guess he will be Alan's academic grandson. And I was having a discussion with Alan the other day that one of my student's student recently received a PhD and is on the faculty at Purdue, making her Alan's academic great-great-great-grandchild, and I guess making her Roger Brockett's great-great-great-great academic grandchild.
Scientific notation.
Exactly. Which is quite amazing because they both look so young. At any rate. Oops. So, a little roadmap of what I'll be doing. I'll be talking about the problem, a little related work in motivation, and talking about something we call model reference adaptive search for doing global optimization, with the terminology obviously being something that resonates from adaptive control. And the idea is that we have looked at a lot of work in this area. We're trying to learn what's going on in this area, and there are many, many different algorithms that people have devised. Many seem to work well, and there's not a lot of analysis, particularly of why they work well. And so what we wanted to do was to try to both combine some rigorous analysis with actually some numerical work and try to find algorithms that work well and just try to understand what's going on in this area from a somewhat system theoretic point of view. So the idea is that we are basically trying to we have some solution space X in Rn, and it could either be a continuous set in which we're trying to optimize, or it could be a discrete combinatorial problem. There's an objective function H that we're trying to maximize or minimize. We're trying to find an optimal X star in this set that maximizes this function. And in terms of proving results, we'll have result assumptions on existence and uniqueness of a solution. But there may be many, many local minima. So there are many, many problems of this type. You may be doing parameter estimation in some design problem for mechanical systems. Maxima, sorry. You'll see changes throughout the talk. Sometimes it will be minima, sometimes it will be maxima. The examples actually will be minima, so you have to state it one way or the other. And so there are many possible applications of this. It may be design problems in mechanical systems. It may be network design problems. Maybe combinatorial optimization problems. In dynamic problems, it may be finding optimal policies for stochastic control problems for stationary optimal control problems. So there are a lot of interesting examples in this area, sort of test functions people tend to use. This is a something called a Rosenbrock function, which is very sort of ill-conditioned in the sense you can get into a valley, but then it sometimes takes very long to get to the minimum once you get in the valley. This is a trigonometric type of function which has many local optima, and as the dimension increases, there are exponentially more optima. You may have a problem where you have local minima, but you have some plateaus in between them. And these are can be quite difficult problems to solve in any way efficiently. So there are many approaches to such problems. There have been one way to think about different types of problems are what you might call instance-based approaches, where your search for the solution at the next step of your algorithm depends directly on the solutions generated at the current step of the algorithm. So some algorithms of this type are simulated annealing. Genetic algorithms, you may have a whole population of solutions at one time step and at the next step of the algorithm. Taboo search, there's a recent one called nested partitions. These are all instance-based approaches. There's also been a recent interest in what you might call model-based approaches, where at each step of the algorithm, there's a what you might call a model. Now, this is not a dynamic model like we would often think of in control theory, but there's a probability distribution at each step of the algorithm, and this model is what new solutions are generated from. And then, so there's an indirect dependence of, say, the next generation of solutions on the previous generation of solutions. And there are a number of algorithms of this type. I'm not going to discuss all of them. One is ant colony optimization, you may have heard of, again, a biologically motivated algorithm. There's a recent one which has been quite successful called the cross-entropy method, another one called the estimation of distributions algorithm. So at each step of the algorithm, there are sort of two sub-steps. A population of candidate solutions is generated. These are basically random samples according to this probability distribution or model at the current step. And then somehow or another, the parameters of the model are updated on the basis of the data in the previous step in such a way that hopefully you'll concentrate the future search in regions that contain high-quality solutions. So let me say something about some of the types of algorithms that motivate what we're going to do. So genetic algorithms are, again, evolutionary type algorithms of the type that Grzegorz had mentioned earlier, which works with a population of solutions. And at each step of the algorithm, you update the population. You generate a new generation of possible solutions, possible optima, using various kinds of operators, crossover, mutation. They're often probabilistic operators. And then you select candidates for the next generation from the old and the new ones. Now, people have looked at other types of algorithms, in some ways based on knowledge of how genetic algorithms work. And so there has recently been work on something called estimation of distribution algorithms, which works with a sequence of probability distributions over the solution space, this type of model I'm talking about. And so the steps of a typical procedure might be an initialization with a starting distribution G0, and then you iterate, generating a population from the current distribution, evaluating the newly generated solutions, and selecting some subset to update the distribution. So a key question in these types of algorithms is how to update the probability distributions. So traditional estimation of distribution algorithms use a very explicit construction. They try to update the whole probability distribution over the solution space in some way, which can be very difficult and computationally expensive. So an alternative is to use some type of parameterized family of distributions at each step of the algorithm, and then to try to minimize the distance somehow to the desired probability distributions that you'd like to have at each step, using some type of projection.
What do you mean you'd like to have? You have some function you're trying to minimize. It should define the probability distribution, shouldn't it?
Let me put off the answer to that. I'm getting a little ahead of myself. I'll say something about the type of distribution you'd like to have. Basically, what you would like to have in the end is a probability distribution with all the mass concentrated at the optimal solution. Okay? And so there will be some sequence of distributions that hopefully moves toward that, and that's what you'd like to be close to. But let me say a few things more about how you get to that. So there is a method, as I said, the cross-entropy method, which at each step uses an optimal important sampling reference distribution. And this model reference adaptive search approach that I'll be telling you about.
Steve, can you comment on what optimal important sampling is? Or are you going to give a bit of a
case? I actually
maybe
was.
It's not important.
It's not that important in the talk. It's a concept that originated in doing, I will say a little more about how it comes up in cross-entropy. So we'll be looking at a general sequence of model reference distributions that it turns out will be implicit, as you'll see from the algorithm. Okay, so here's the general approach. The general approach is that we will have a given sequence of reference distributions. The idea is we will start with some distributions, and there will be some iteration, and hopefully these will converge to a distribution concentrated at the optimal, because we're trying to find the optimal solution. There will be a family of parameterized solutions over the solution space, and at the kth step of the iteration, we'll generate candidate solutions according to this current parameterized probability distribution. And then the next value of the parameter will be calculated using data collected in the previous step to bias future search toward promising regions by trying to minimize some distance between the parameterized distribution and the next distribution in this sequence of reference distributions, which I haven't defined for you yet. And the idea is that the algorithm will converge to an optimal solution if this sequence of reference distributions converges to an optimal solution. So there are many ways possibly to get a sequence of distributions that would converge nicely to an optimal distribution. Here's one particular idea that we'll use in one instance of this algorithm. So the idea is that, remember, h of x was the function we're trying to maximize. So the idea is to try to tilt this previous distribution in a way that weights good solutions more. Okay. So if you multiply for each value in the solution space, the value of the probability, the weight at the previous step, times the value of the function you're trying to maximize at that x, then you'll be putting more weight at the next step of the algorithm on solutions that have greater value. Okay, so this is one way to design an algorithm. And then you could try in some way to design an algorithm which gets close to following this sequence of distributions and then eventually converges to an optimal solution. So it turns out not to be that difficult to show that if you had a sequence of distributions designed like this, that the expectation with respect to these distributions of the function you're trying to maximize is actually increasing, and it converges essentially to an atomic distribution at the value at the optimal optimal solution. Okay, so, and this is related to recursions you may have seen in other places. You'll see things like this in learning automata, estimation of distribution algorithms. There are algorithms with the phrase multiplicative weights where this kind of recursion occurs. And other choices of a sequence G here result in other algorithms. For example, the cross-entropy method, as I'll show you. This particular choice will lead to global convergence and our ability to prove global convergence.
Do you have to compute the denominator?
Exactly. So I mean, this is just a sort of thought experiment of a sequence of things you might like to have, but then the question is, what do you actually compute? Okay, so this is just meant to guide our thinking in terms of a real algorithm. So a specific, so that's a, having an algorithm with a particular, within a general sequence of G's, reference distributions, it's kind of what we call model reference adaptive search. And here we're trying to design a specific instantiation of that. Obviously, difficulties are, you know, requires enumerating all points in the solution space. You may not be able to actually compute the GKs. You don't want to calculate the expectation that you saw. There are obviously many problems with this. So an approach is, and the one which we followed is, well, first of all, we use a Monte Carlo sampling approach. So we're not actually going to calculate expectations. We're not going to evaluate the function for every point in the solution space. We're going to do sampling. But we're also going to use a parameterized family of distributions at each step. And then instead of using these G's and sampling from them, we're going to find an F, find a theta, that makes this distribution close to this one at each time step, and project onto it and use the Fs. And what's interesting about the approach is that you don't really ever have to compute the Gs and do this projection, minimize this distance. This is all done implicitly. So in order to try to describe this algorithm, I'm going to give you what I call the deterministic version. So this is without sampling. This is, I'll do the version where you actually do sampling later. So there's a few things I just have to tell you about notation. There's a function S you will see because in some ways the formula I wrote down before didn't make sense because I said there was a density or a distribution function that equaled h of x times the thing at the previous time, but we don't know h of x is positive. So the S here is just to make sure when we create a new probability density or probability mass function, that it's actually the positive. We have a parameterized family of distributions. And then we have a row which will determine the proportion of the solutions at each time step that we actually use the updating. Okay, we'll be trying to find the solutions that have the highest value at each step to help us update the solution. So at iteration k, only solutions that have a value better than gamma k are used in updating the next set of the parameters. So we'll generate a whole lot of X's, and then we'll order them and we'll use the best ones in order to do the updating. Okay, so you don't really have to look at all the mathematics on this slide. I don't actually have a way of covering this up like if I had an overhead projector. But so let me talk through this a little bit. So the 1 minus rho quantiles with respect to this function are just the gamma k plus 1 is the value of the function we're trying to maximize such that rho percent of the solutions are greater, or have value greater than that. Okay, so we're just going to look at the ones that have value greater than gamma k plus 1. And this is the equation that we use for updating theta. Okay, now this looks very complicated. It actually has essentially an expectation, an integral over the solution space. It looks at solutions that are greater than gamma k plus 1. But what will be interesting is that if we pick a particular class of probability functions, namely those in a natural exponential family, for example, Gaussian distributions, this maximum can be computed explicitly, so you don't actually have to go through another maximization. So think of this as we'll be updating a sequence of Gaussian distributions where the parameter theta is the mean and the variance, mean vector and covariance vector, and this particular maximization will be able to be computed explicitly. What the lemma says, I won't go through it in detail, is that this actually minimizes what's called the Kullback-Leibler distance between the g that we would like to have at the k plus first step and f of the parameter theta. So we're trying to find the value of the parameter theta that minimizes a particular distance between gk plus 1 and f. It's actually given by this formula, the distance. And it turns out that this formula minimizes it. And what's interesting about this formula is that it doesn't contain g in it explicitly anywhere. So you don't actually have to compute this sequence of reference distributions that you're trying to follow. And this is just sort of that expanded in a slightly bigger way. Okay, you calculate the 1 minus rho quantile, the this value of gamma such that rho percent of the solutions are greater than that, and then you update the parameter in this way. So I'm not going to go through theory or proofs, but basically, if we restrict the class of densities, distribution functions, to a natural exponential family, which is one that those of you in signal processing have seen many times. So it's a broad class of distributions. It includes many familiar ones. We actually, when we do calculations or simulations, have used Gaussian. If we look at that family, then under some mild regularity conditions, you're actually able to show that you get convergence to the optimal solution. This distribution you're calculating, if it's multivariate Gaussian, its mean converges to the optimal solution, its covariance converges to zero, and if you use a distribution with univariate independent components, again, you get it converging to an optimal solution. So I want to say a few words about the cross-entropy method, because it's one which has been used a lot and has been very effective as an algorithm. It was pioneered by Rubinstein and colleagues. There's a website, cemethod.org. Not even just a university website. So this cross-entropy method, and cross-entropy, again, is another name for this type of distance I was talking about between two distributions. It was originally used to find this optimal parameterized important sampling measure. And what this is, basically, is a way of doing simulations of rare events. Okay, it is a way, if you have a problem and you're doing simulations and events only occur very rarely, then it's very difficult, just doing a standard simulation, to estimate probabilities of these rare events, which hardly ever occur. And this important sampling measure is a way of sort of changing the underlying probability measure so that when you do calculations, when you do simulations, you can actually get a much better handle on what these rare events are and what their probabilities are. But what was then discovered later was that some of the same types of algorithms could be applied to combinatorial optimization problems. And so, like the algorithms I just described, it also updates the distributions iteratively. However, it's interesting that there are not the same types of proofs of global convergence under fairly general conditions. And so we were trying to understand why this is. These are algorithms that work very well, but sometimes there are problems, and yet they look similar to what we just described. So this is a formula which is almost the same as the formula I showed you before for our algorithm. There are just some slight differences. But what's interesting is that this formula for updating the parameter minimizes the distance between the parameterized distribution and what I'm calling the cross-entropy G, the cross-entropy reference distribution, which is given in this way. But notice that in our formula for recursively computing this reference distribution, we had GK on the right and GK plus 1 on the left-hand side of the equation. So it was basically a recursive equation. This, what happens in the cross-entropy method is that instead of having GK here, you have the previous value of the parameterized distribution. And it turns out that this makes it actually much more difficult to prove global convergence. It was very easy to prove global convergence of this sequence of G's that I wrote down. It is not easy, and in fact you can find counterexamples to global convergence in this particular case. So one of the things we've been trying to understand is the relationship between these various algorithms. And this is, I think, for us kind of an insight of into what some of the relationships are. So the model reference adaptive search has a general sequence of implicit reference models. The one I wrote down is one possible sequence, but you could write down other possible sequences that might converge more quickly, that might, in practical situations actually do better. Whereas the cross-entropy method does this in a very particular way at each iteration, which actually depends. That sequence of G's actually depends on this sequence of projected parameterized sequences, so that we're able to get stronger theoretical convergence results for the model reference adaptive search. And in fact, we also get global convergence if you take enough samples in various ways for the Monte Carlo version of this algorithm. Whereas, in fact, that's not possible for cross-entropy method. And on the other hand, the cross-entropy method works really well from people's experience, so we also wanted to do some computational comparisons to see whether we just have an algorithm and some theoretical results that are purely of theoretical interest, or whether actually it's an algorithm that performs well. So I won't say a lot in detail about the actual implementation and Monte Carlo version. You do some obvious things. At each step of the algorithm, you just take a finite number of samples, say n sub k. You replace these 1 minus rho quantiles, the top rho percent, with sampled quantiles. You replace the integrals and expected values by sample averages. And then the rho k's and the number of samples are adaptively increasing. And then you can converge, you can prove global convergence, basically the same types of results that one has for the deterministic algorithm I showed you before, which is really not implementable. with probability 1. So let me say a few things about some of the computational comparison. The thing is that used something which is done in many of these methods. It's used in the cross-entropy method as well, a sort of parameter smoothing. So instead of taking the optimal, the projected parameter theta k plus 1, we kind of take a smooth version where we take omega times the current computed theta hat and 1 minus omega times the previous one. It's kind of a smoothing, a kind of persistent excitation, kicking the system around a little bit so that it doesn't get stuck. These examples, by the way, are minimization, not maximization, which is why I was getting confused before. So we looked at a number of different types of functions. That trigonometric function I showed you a picture of, except we looked at a 20-dimensional version of it instead of a 2-dimensional version, which obviously I can't draw. A 20-dimensional version of this Rosenbrock function, a 20-dimensional function called the Powell singular function, which again is quite ill-conditioned in different directions, and then a number of other functions that are standard test functions. And we compared it primarily with the cross-entropy method, which this is quite similar to. So again, these are the 2-dimensional Rosenbrock and trigonometric functions. These are some pretty wild functions. This is another one which has a large number of local optima, which increases drastically as you increase the dimension. This is a function which, in fact, is very badly scaled and quite noisy. And then this is another one of the functions I showed you before. So what we did was to do a Monte Carlo simulation over, I think it was 50 sample pads, and compared the model reference adaptive search, which is the solid line, the cross-entropy method with two different values of this smoothing parameter, one that was recommended by the people who do cross-entropy, which didn't seem to work as well as something else we chose, and simulated annealing. And so what we see overall is that the this model reference adaptive search is quite comparable to the cross-entropy method in many cases. It's actually somewhat better in this case. But there are some badly scaled functions in which this model reference adaptive search method is significantly better than the cross-entropy method. And there are some problems like this one, which is not badly scaled in terms of, badly scaled basically means level curves are very long and narrow in some dimensions, and long in some dimensions and narrow in others. This is one that has a very large number of local optima, but is not badly scaled, and the cross-entropy method actually does better. Again, they're quite somewhat similar in this example. And this is another one in which the problem is very badly scaled, and this model reference adaptive search problems algorithm seems to do significantly better than the cross-entropy method. So these are, I mean, for us, we're trying to get some firm mathematical foundations for the algorithms and do some preliminary calculations. We are not trying to do absolutely optimal tuning of the algorithms, and I'm not making any great claims in terms of what the exact comparisons are. But this model reference adaptive search algorithm seems to perform well on a variety of continuous optimization problems, particularly badly scaled ones. And cross-entropy seems to work best, or certainly better relative to model reference adaptive search, on problems that are well scaled and have many local optima. We were primarily looking at continuous optimization, but we also looked at some discrete combinatorial optimization problems. And there are some, you know, websites with a whole library of standard problems that people do comparisons on. And basically, this algorithm had similar performance to cross-entropy in some ways. But the performance actually seemed quite good with a modest number of tours generated. So these are traveling salesman problems with some number of cities, and the salesman has to visit all of the different cities with different weights on different branches between the cities. And these are the numbers of cities in each of these problems. This is the number of cities visited, and these may look like large numbers until you think about the number of possible tours that there are for this number of cities. These are really quite modest. So H, I think we did 10 sample paths, 10 versions of this. H lower star, and we're minimizing. H lower star is the worst of the 10 paths of this algorithm. H upper star was the best. H best is the best known solution. You know, everyone's always competing and trying to get the best solution. So, you know, in many of these, we got the best solution or close to the best solution with a fairly modest number of tours generated. Okay, so again, it seems like a reasonable algorithm to sort of put into this whole variety of algorithms. One of the things that we actually, I mean, one of the reasons we looked at this in the first place is, you know, I guess having been Alan's first student, I'm really a stochastic kind of guy. And we really wanted to look at this for stochastic optimization problems. And so we've also done initial work on that. So basically, in terms of just optimizing H of X, we are optimizing a stochastic problem. It might be a queuing problem, a manufacturing production problem, and where we're trying to maximize the or minimize the expected value of some function of X. And in some ways, it's sort of obvious how to approach this. You kind of take sampled versions of various things. So we would use sample average approximations. In the previous algorithm, if I generate a sample of X in the sample space, then I just evaluate H of X, and I know that's the value. But here, since it's random, I can't just evaluate H of X. So when I generate at the fifth step of the algorithm, in my Monte Carlo simulation, I get X, I then have to sample H of X, which is random. So I have to sample it some number of times, say M sub K times, in order to get a value of X, a function value of X at that step. Okay, so there's an additional sample averaging because I can't just write down H of X. So that's an obvious thing to try and an obvious way to approach this. And the parameter updating again is virtually identical to what I wrote down before, except where you saw before H bar of X, where you saw before H of X, you now have this little sample average I was talking about. And the obvious thing to try is to show that this converges as the number of, as mk goes to infinity. And in fact, one can prove global convergence with probability one under some reasonable conditions. The proofs in this stochastic case become significantly more difficult than the proofs in the other case. I don't have time to talk about those, but it's a significantly more complicated and I think interesting problem. And the way we actually implemented this was increasing MK adaptively so that, and the proof of convergence doesn't depend on this, but obviously how fast it converges and how it performs does depend on how you do this. So we used small MK values in an initial search phase and then increased MK as we got farther along and needed precise estimates. And this performed well on some initial simple examples. We haven't really done this yet on examples that are very complicated. This is fairly new work. So let me just conclude by saying that this is a somewhat generic approach in the sense that it allows one to have a sequence of reference distributions that you're trying to sort of follow adaptively in this algorithm in order to get convergence to a global optimum. It seems to perform well on the types of test problems that many people use for these types of algorithms. And we're actually able to prove global convergence both for the deterministic optimization problem and the stochastic optimization problem. But we're still working both to understand this approach and to do much more on the stochastic optimization side, applying it to a variety of applications, which we haven't really done yet. Looking at high-dimensional problems and trying to understand how one might design other algorithms in this framework. I mean, what are other ways of choosing reference, a sequence of reference distributions you might want to follow in order to do this type of optimization? So I would like to conclude by again thanking Albert and wishing my congratulations to Alan and David. And thank you for listening.